long-lost deacon who finally returned, Mr. Bob Carlisle.
Aloha. We had a very good time, my wife and I did, in Hawaii. And we had really good weather, and it's a little warm. You know, in the summertime, it's 80 to 90 degrees over there, but the water is really nice. And the pool, our room was across the road, across the little driveway from the pool. They had a really nice pool. It was very, very enjoyable. We had a good time. So let's talk about the Feast of Tabernacles. Who's ready? All right. So, chance favors the prepared mind. Nearly every famous man on the face of the earth, from Genghis Khan to most presidents and even Oprah Winfrey, have their own little way of saying this particular saying. It's a concept. It's a concept that is in the Bible. Chance favors the prepared mind. It means to plan ahead. It means to be ready. And today, that's what I would like to talk about, is preparing for the feast, some practical things for you to prepare and know before going to the feast, and some principles I want us to think about while at the feast. First, let's go to 1 Peter 3:15. 1 Peter 3:15. And we've all read the scripture many, many times, and it's been used several different ways. We've all heard sermons about it, but today I want to look at it a little bit differently. But in your hearts, honor Christ the Lord as holy, always being prepared to make a defense to anyone who asks you for a reason for the hope that is in you. Yet do it with gentleness and with respect. Be prepared to make a defense. To be prepared, that term in the Bible is in over 100 different verses, in many different applications. It's God's way. It is a way that God thinks. Christ said, I'm going to prepare a place for you that I'm going to bring back. Christ is preparing a place for us. We need to be prepared in what we do. We need to be ready for what we choose to do. As we travel, we should be a really good example. You know, the feast, you're not going to work. You're going to services every day. You're surrounded by God's people. You're staying in a hotel. You're eating out. You're not having to prepare meals. We should really be in a great frame of mind. Though occasionally, in times past, I know I've seen people get a little edgy. And that's something we wanted to prepare for, and I'll talk about later in my message today. They should see us as people that are happy, because we know we have hope, and especially at the feast. The feast is looking forward to the millennium. It's looking forward to a time of happiness and a time that we should be enjoying. One of the things we can do to be prepared for the feast, and this is something that I've started doing a long time ago, when you travel, you get trapped and you waste time. It happens. Especially if you're traveling overseas or you're going to be on an airplane, you wait in line at the airplane, you wait in line to go through the checkout, you wait in line for security, you wait for the plane to get there. When the plane's late, you're stuck waiting more. So these are a couple things I do. And you can take a book, but you could take a booklet. You could go online and download a paper on some topic that you've been thinking about. You could take advantage of the time, and I've done this, just set, and you don't have to close your eyes to pray. You can sit in a room full of people and quietly just talk to God. Think about where you're going, what you're doing, what's happening in your life, about the feast and some of the things that are going on. Don't waste time that is given to you that's idle time. Plan ahead, plan for it, take advantage of that idle time and try to make good use of it. One of the things we need to be prepared about, and this is something that comes from an example. This thought came from an example that just happened to us recently. My wife and I have a favorite travel bag that we use, and we've been using it for over a decade. And it looked like it was really in good shape, and the wheels started coming apart on it on this last trip. So we've gone out this week and bought another one because we need a decent carry-on. Take a look at your baggage Don't wait until the day before you're going to travel to pull the bags out of the closet. Pull them out, check the zippers, make sure they're tagged, make sure they've got the information on them that should be on them. Make sure you don't wait to put the tag on with your name till you're standing in line and get that little paper thing that falls off anyway. Look at the zippers, look at the wheels on them. Make sure your luggage is in good condition. It's a physical thing, it's a simple thing, but it can really mean a lot when you're trying to go through an airport and half a wheel falls off one side and you now have to pick up a 50-pound bag and carry it with your hands. This creates an uncomfortable position. Another thing to think about is security, and security changes constantly. This is a money clip. This money clip has a knife blade on it that's an inch and a quarter long. This has been legal, and illegal half a dozen times in the last 10 years. I've got to where when I travel, I just take it off and I put it in my shaving kit when I get there, and I just put another money clip on that doesn't have a file or anything on it. I've even had them taken away that only had a file on it. So try to anticipate, try to keep up with the laws, but it's, you know, we're going to be going to Italy. In Italy, you don't have to take your shoes off. So if you wanted to wear shoes that are lace-up or a tall lace-up boot or something, it'd be fine. But here we know that they make us take our shoes off. So you'd want to plan for that. Wear something that's easy to get on and off. Laptops, sometimes they want to see them. Sometimes they don't want to see them. One thing I want to warn you of, and I saw this happen recently at an airport, it has to be able to turn on. Don't take a laptop or a camera or anything that does not have a hot battery in it. Because if you go through a TSA line and security says, turn that on, I want to see it work, and it doesn't work, they will not let you take it into a secure area. It will not be going on your trip. So if you've got your favorite camera with you and you're waiting to buy batteries till you get there and the batteries in it are dead or there's not batteries in it, you may not get to take it. So plan ahead for some of these things and look ahead. One of the things that worked that helped us out and was good for us, and something I want to plant in your mind is something that may happen for you. We're no longer allowed to lock our luggage. However, locks can be very, very valuable in certain conditions. For example, we were in Hawaii. We had to check out by 10 o'clock in the morning, but the plane didn't leave till 8 o'clock at night. So we've got all day that we can drive around and do things in the car. I don't want to leave my luggage in plain sight in a car in a tourist known area because you get your windows broken out and things stolen out of your car. So we left the bags at the hotel at the side of the lobby and they kept an eye on them. That's a time you'd want to be able to put the locks on your bags. Another good time to lock your bags is when you're leaving your room, depending on where you're at. If it's not a really, really high-class hotel, if you're maybe a little bit more in a budget area, it's a good idea to lock your bags. Don't tempt the people that are going in and out of the room. You're doing them a disservice by leaving something open that has something valuable in it. Even though the locks are small, they're easily pried. If you lock it up, you're a lot safer off. If you're traveling overseas, or if you're flying, or if you're going very far at all, one of the things you want to remember is you make copies of everything that's important. Your ID, your passport, your train tickets, plane tickets, any travel tickets, reservations for cars, reservations for tours, reservations for anything. Make three copies, I recommend. You put them in different places. Maybe one on your carry-on, maybe one in your baggage that you're sending, and maybe another one on your person somewhere other than your purse or your wallet. Several times I've seen people who have had their luggage never arrive or had stuff stolen or got pickpocketed. I wear cargo pants when I travel. I carry my wallet and my passport in the front pockets on the front of my thigh. The reason for this is I feel it all the time because I'm not used to having anything in the front of my legs. I feel it all the time, and it's hard to steal. One of the things that crooks do in airports in particular, you feel someone bump you and you don't think anything of it. If they have a razor blade, they'll cut your pocket on your pants, men with wallets. they'll slice the back pocket. Your wallet falls on the ground. You don't even realize it fell out until later. Being in a foreign country and you don't even have a photostatic copy of airline tickets, your passport, or maybe a tour that you booked, it's a good idea to make triple copies of these things and put them in different locations. So if you really need them, they're available to you, at least in copies. Another thing to keep in mind, money. Now, a lot of us live on credit cards these days, and this is something that can really, really come back on you if you're not prepared. Don't travel broke. Carry money. And if you're going to a foreign country, get money before you get there. And I'll give you several reasons why. And this doesn't matter if you're in the U.S. or you're in Europe. When you get off a plane, if the plane was late, you might be hungry. You might need to buy water. You might need to get water to be able to take pills. You may need transportation because the plane got there so late, the church bus was supposed to take you where it's going, has already left. You now have to hire a taxi. A lot of places, toilets cost money. Or, for example, in Europe, you walk into a toilet, there's a woman in there that takes care of the toilet. Even in the men's room, there's a woman there, a maid. You don't use that facility unless you put money on that tray. And if you put American money on that tray, she'll pick it up and throw it back at you. So having some cash is really an intelligent thing to have on you when you travel. Whether it's in the U.S. or whether you're traveling overseas, a little bit of money can go a long ways. One of the things to remember, there's no such thing as climate control. You can watch, I remember vividly, I was going to go to Texas and going to go deer hunting. It was the second or third time I went out. And I was going in the first, November 1st. It had been in the 70s for a month. I got online every single day. Texas was in a terrible drought. They hadn't had any rain in 3 years. It's in the 70s. I packed accordingly to hunt. The day before I flew, it was 74 degrees. The day I arrived, it was 9 degrees with a 30-mile-an-hour wind, and it was sleeting, and it was starting to stick to the pavement. And I had a two-hour drive to make and did not have a four-wheel drive car rented. So you never really know what might happen. So be prepared. Be prepared. If you don't like carrying an umbrella or something, this is one of the little handy little things that I carry with us whenever we travel. It's like a $4 poncho. This is big enough that it covers your head. It comes out really wide. If you're a woman with a purse or a man with a briefcase, it's large enough that it hangs all the way down to your knees and is huge. It's just like a giant plastic bag with a hood on it. And I would rather carry this in my back pocket than an umbrella most times. And there's a lot of places that an umbrella doesn't work well. If you're going to be hiking around brush or things where it might grab an umbrella, or if there's wind, umbrellas get folded backwards. This is a really handy little safety thing to kind of just carry along to be safe. Let's turn to Matthew 5 and verse 9. Matthew 5 and in verse 9. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the sons of God. The thing we need to remember, the word religion means a specific way of life. Because religion can apply to any number of different faiths or beliefs. Religion, the word religion, means a specific way of life. How you act is how people are going to judge your religion, what you believe in. They're going to judge your faith in God and what you think of God by how you act and react to other people. And it doesn't matter if the plane was late. It doesn't matter how tired or jet-lagged you are. It doesn't matter if you had a premium room booked and it's a small room. If you're the person in the front of the line yelling and waving your arms, everyone's going to see you. And they are going to judge God by your actions. We should be peacemakers. We should be the quiet people. We should try to work things out. We should be peaceful. One of the things you have to keep in mind, aircraft, air companies overbook. Bus companies overbook. Transportation companies overbook. Hotels overbook. Virtually every industry that you will deal with during the feast, whether you're going on a boat ride or you're going for a tour or you're getting on a plane, wherever you're going, everybody is overbooking, anticipating that people are not going to show up. You have to realize that the person on the other side of the counter does not have control of that. So getting mad at the man or woman standing on the other side of the counter because your room isn't there, your car isn't there, whatever isn't there, doesn't do any good, and they probably can't do anything about it anyway. So how you react to that is really important. Let's go to Galatians 5:22, and we've all read Galatians 5:22 and 23 many times, but we're just going to go through it one more time just quickly and talk about it, just a couple of things. And, of course, these are the fruits of the Spirit. We are God's people. We have God's Holy Spirit. We need to act like it. This is how we should act. The fruits of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, without complaining, long-suffering and still have kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Against such, of course, there is no law. We need to make a focused effort, especially at feast time, because we have no excuses. I mean, we're not working. We're out there to have a good time. We're out there to go to services every day and hear about the millennium and everything. We should be on our absolute best behavior. We should be setting the best example. But I want you to mentally think about it. I want you to plan to set a good example. I want you to think about it before you go. Before you walk out that door to go to the airport or to travel or you get to your hotel or wherever you're going, remind yourself, I'm setting an example for what I believe in, for the faith and for the Holy Spirit that God has given me. Deuteronomy 14 and 23, and I think I'm actually going to start, I'm going to start in the middle of verse 25. And this is talking, of course, about going to the Feast of Tabernacles or keeping God's holy days, and it's telling us how we should keep those holy days and what we should do. He says, take your money in your hand, and this is pretty much what we do. I mean, previously in the scripture, it talks about taking your flocks with you and so forth, and that doesn't really apply in our time and age. So we take your money in your hand, and you go to the place which the Lord chooses, and you shall spend that money for whatever your heart desires, for oxen, for sheep, for wine, for similar drink, for whatever your heart desires. You shall eat that before the Lord your God, and you shall rejoice, you and your household. This does not give you permission to be rude. I have heard in the past people will talk, and I think the biggest place that I see our people make a mistake is restaurants. This whatever your heart desires thing. You expect to walk into a restaurant, and this was especially bad in the old days when we were a large number. We flooded a town out when we came in. I mean, when you dump 6,000, 8,000, 10,000 people into a town, we overwhelmed the services a lot of times. And especially in the past, I can remember members getting short with waitresses or waiters or people that are serving food or at a bar trying to get a drink or whatever, because I'm here, I've got money, I get to have whatever I desire, and you're not bringing it to me quick enough. We shouldn't act like that. And I mean, I know we know it, but let's try to remember that. Let's put that little bug in the back of our mind before we go. When someone's serving you and someone's waiting on you and someone is doing something for you, treat them reasonable. Treat them decently. Have patience. Realize that, especially if you're in a hotel, where we've got most of the hotel booked, they're going to be pushed to their limits. And if they're only using the people that are normally manning the place, then you have to be patient. You know, we're going to Italy, and I've been there many times, and the particular location we're going to is very enjoyable. It's a sit-down, serve meal. It's a 5-course dinner. Every single night. And If you're not ready to spend an hour and a half having dinner or 2 hours having dinner, you're in the wrong place. Because, number one, you're in Europe. I'm going to be in Europe. That's the way they eat. And number two, they only have so many people, and we don't even fit in the dining room. They've got this huge area. They put this giant tent over, and it's like a huge overflow that's more than their whole dining room. So we really are pushing their ability to the absolute limit. Have patience. You've got nowhere to go. We're at the feast. Have a good time. Relax. Let the people waiting on you and serving you relax and enjoy you being there. One of the things that I think makes people irritable at the feast, especially the first couple of days, is jet lag. Not all of us are flying. Not all of us are traveling that far. However, I have 10 points that I'm going to give you. Some of these are mine. Some of these are from Italy, the site in Italy. Carmelo sends out a list of 3 or 4 things for you to do to help avoid or help lessen the effect of jet lag, which really can be debilitating if you're not careful, depending on how far you're going. Number one, and this actually works pretty good if you take the time to do it. And this is why I'm telling you this now, because planning ahead is what some of these things require. If you're going to really be several hours off, it's a good idea to start going to bed like 3 or 4 days before you leave. Go to bed 3 hours early, 2 hours early, or late, whichever it is. Get used to staying up later, or get used to getting up earlier. Start adjusting your time clock in your body before you get there so it isn't all slammed on you all at one time. Always eat light before traveling, because when you travel, your body is in a sedimentary state. Whether you're sitting in a car, in a plane, on a bus, you don't want a heavy meal because it'll give you indigestion and it'll give you problems. Drink plenty of water. This is especially critical when flying because you dehydrate enormously when flying. Don't get dehydrated when traveling. Avoid tea and coffee, especially before you're going to bed. Change the time. This is something I started doing a long time ago. Change the time on your watch the second you get on the plane. If you're traveling in a car and you're going to be traveling 4 or 5 hours, somebody in the car put your watch on the time of where you're going. Now, I have a watch I've owned for years, and it actually has 2 faces on it. So right now in Italy, it is 5:30 in the morning in Italy. Huh? In the evening. I'm sorry, yes, because it's there before us. It's 5:30 in the evening. So I can look at my watch at any time. If I need to call back to the U.S. and talk to the people at my business, I know what time it is. I know what's happening. I know what's going on. But when you're traveling, if you know what time it is where you're going, you start thinking on that time already. And especially if you have a long airplane flight, pretty soon you just, you know, the plane's dark inside, or whether people have the shades up or down. It's kind of a neutral area. So if you can start adjusting yourself just by looking at your watch, the time where you're going, and getting used to thinking in that time frame. It's a good idea if you're traveling on a plane for very far, especially like 10 and 12 hours, get up and walk around. Most planes in a long flight, after they're up and they get up high enough, the plane levels out, it gets smooth. Get up and move around. Get a little exercise. Walk up and down the plane. Move around a little bit. If you arrive in daylight, this can be a tough one, but I've found the worse it is, the better it is. If you arrive, like my wife and I returned from Hawaii, okay, we landed at 6 in the morning. I don't sleep on planes. So we got up to be able to leave the room by 10 the previous morning, so we were up at 6 in the morning. We landed at 6 in the morning. I haven't slept. Don't take a nap. Make yourself stay up until it's bedtime. It can be hard, especially if you're several hours away, if it's 4 or 5 hours until it gets dark, but when you go to bed, you crash like a rock, and the next morning you bounce up, and it's like you're almost adapted overnight. It works really great if you get there in the daytime and have to stay up. I know it's hard, But if you can focus and make yourself do it, it has served me really, really well. There is a over-the-counter non-drug prescription or non-drug thing called melatonin. It doesn't work for me at all. Some people, it's really good, and it's something that's natural that you take to kind of reset your time clock. You take it the first day when you get there, and it kind of helps your body to adapt. Number nine, get exercise before you go to bed. One of the things we have to watch about on vacation is if you're sedentary all day, if you don't use your body isn't tired. You go to bed at night, and you can't sleep. So try to get out and get some exercise before the end of the day. And, of course, some people can take a sleep aid. Because of different things I have going on, I'm not able to take any kind of a sleeping pill. However, my doctor told me to take an antihistamine if I wanted a little help getting to sleep, just an over-the-counter antihistamine, and that does help. So that's something you might be able to do. Now, an example of jet lag. One time, a few years ago, I had gone over to help in Africa, and John Elliott and I had decided to end our trip in Zanzibar, which is an island off the east coast of Africa. So the next morning we got up. We flew from Zanzibar to Dar es Salaam, which is the capital of Tanzania. We flew from Dar es Salaam to Nairobi, which is the capital of Kenya. We flew from Nairobi to London. London has a mandatory 7-hour layover when you come in or out of Kenya. I don't know why, but it's been there for years. So you're in the airport for 7 hours. Then we got on a plane and flew to JFK. From JFK, we both flew to Phoenix. Now, by the time we got to Phoenix, we had been traveling for 40 hours. And the person I was traveling with, when we got there, my plane was delayed, had mechanical problems, and I didn't know when I was going to get out of Phoenix. So I'm just kind of stuck there. And he said, you know what? I'll stay here until your plane leaves. I don't want you to be sitting here in the plane, in the airport, alone after all this traveling. That's the right attitude. And I told him, no, just go on home. And they got the plane fixed in a couple hours, and I got home in a little over 42 hours. But you can have the right attitude. And I don't believe I've ever been more jet-lagged or seen anybody else more jet-lagged than we were at that moment. Yet we were both able to have a good attitude and focus on it. You don't have to become difficult or coarse because you're just tired. Just buck up, campers, and be nice. That's what we want you to do. All right. Now, before I make my last point, I have one other point I want to make. I'm going to read two scriptures. You don't need to turn to them. I'm just going to read them. They're very short. In Ezekiel 38:7, be ready and keep ready, you and all your hosts that are assembled about you, and be a guard for them. In other words, pay attention to what's going on around you and be prepared for anything. Let me read another scripture. Proverbs 22:3. The prudent sees danger and hides himself, but the simple go on and suffer for it. Now I'm going to tell you a story how this applies. Okay? We need to be aware of what's going on around us. Don't be one of these people that could be standing next to something about to happen and not realize what's happening or what's going on. If you see a couple of young men on the side of the road and they're starting to push and shove one another, get away. There's going to be a fight, or there could be a fight. One of them may have a gun. There's no telling how far something like this can get out of hand and go wrong. The example I'm going to give you today happened to us a number of years ago in Rome. Rome is known for pickpockets, and groups of small children that you would never hit or strike attacking you in a group and picking your pocket suddenly and then disappearing into the grass. So we were in a position where we had to travel. We had to look like tourists. And if you have to look like a tourist, be prepared. You know, it's one thing to be walking around in your clothes, but you got a camera hanging around your neck, you're towing a bag down the sidewalk, tourist, stamped right here. So we had to go a half a mile with our bags. So John Elliott was in the front. I was in the rear. I had my girls with me. They had their girls with them. The women are in between. And we stayed really tight. We discussed this before we left, that there may be a problem. If anything happens, everyone come together close, tight, and just hold one another. We saw the kids coming. I saw the kids from about six blocks away in a group coming down the other side of six lanes of traffic. They ran across six lanes of active traffic and pounced on us. And I had all my money and all everything, passports, everything was in a money belt around my waist. I had nothing valuable in my pockets. The ladies had their purses over their neck with their arm around it under their arms. Nobody had anything valuable in their pockets. They swarmed us, and you could just feel pull it all over you. It's like you're being tugged on by 100 little monkeys. And there were about 20 of them. There were about 20 kids, little kids. But you get 20 kids pulling it, you can't cover all of your places at one time enough to protect yourself. But we were prepared, and we all huddled up, and they picked and poked at us for a second, and they're not there more than 10 seconds, bam, they're gone. And they all run in a different direction. They got a couple of chapsticks, a couple packages of Kleenex. That was it, because that's all we had that was available that they could grab. But we were prepared, and we made a plan. If you're in an area you know might be a problem, think of your exit first. Now, the last item, and I think probably one of the most important, obviously is one of the most important, Psalm 145, verse 18. Psalm 145 and verse 18. The Lord is near to all who call upon him, to all who call upon him in truth. Don't forget to pray. I know that sounds almost extreme, but I can't tell you how many people I've talked to that they get to the feast and they get busy and you get up in the morning, you go to service at 10 o'clock, but you slept in because it's the feast, you have to go to work, and you hustled out and then you came back. And next thing you know, it's the end of the day, and you haven't had prayer yet. Whatever your routine is, keep it or modify it for the feast. But remember to stay in touch with God. Remember to pray. It's vitally important. If you don't ask, you won't receive. What did Christ say? Ask, and anything you ask in my name, you will receive. But you have to ask. We have to ask. We should be asking for protection. We should be asking for guidance every day, asking for help every day, asking God to help us keep in the right attitude every day and to set a good example every day. So while you're at the feast, try to focus and keep in mind. Don't let the feast upset your norm or adjust your norm. Make sure that you get your prayer time in and stay close to God at the feast. Everyone have a good feast.